Good mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, a thoughtful perspective on the civic philosophy that doesn't win votes politically, yet makes self-government possible. Also this morning, from summer storms to 4th of July fireworks, how to calm your pets' common summertime anxiety issues. Go ahead and fill your plate at your 4th of July bash. We have the barbecue hangover survival guide that you'll probably need. And what's a celebration without a cocktail? Bombay Sapphire gin mixologist Eddie Johnson will tell us how to prepare their signature drink of the summer. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Thursday, July 2nd, 2026. This I thought was kind of interesting. We were kind of talking about this a little bit yesterday, and the ways that people are making money and all of this. I saw this story on the Newswire, and I thought this was really interesting. A growing number of Americans are ditching the traditional 9-to-5 in favor of passive income, or if not ditching the traditional work schedule, supplementing their income with passive income. This is a report in the Wall Street Journal highlights this trend. They cite the story of a Texas engineer who is earning six figures annually from just 2 hours of work each month. He sells oversized pet hair lint rollers. That's his side hustle, and he makes $115,000, or he did last year, $115,000 selling these pet hair lint rollers. I had no idea there was so much money in this. There's a 31-year-old in Spain, so it's not just this country, 31-year-old in Spain making $3,000 a month licensing an AI-cloned version of his voice. I haven't heard his voice, but it must be great. Because he's allowing AI systems to clone his voice, and he's getting paid for that. Recent Bankrate poll found 25%, roughly one in four Americans, currently run some kind of side hustle. And younger workers, especially, are into this because they doubt that traditional employment will meet their financial goals. But the Wall Street Journal piece goes on to mention that there are some risks involved with this, because obviously there's a crowded market. I doubt that this guy in Texas for very long is going to be the only one selling oversized pet hair lint rollers, kind of cutting into his profits, I'm sure. Then there are the fraudulent income schemes, passive income schemes that are out there. And things of this nature. The FTC has actually pursued several deceptive operations. So you got to be careful that you don't run afoul of regulators. And even apparent success can carry some uncertainty. One 19-year-old in the Wall Street Journal piece is making money reselling products that he buys on Amazon, turning around and selling them on eBay, which happens to violate the terms of both platforms. Both Amazon and eBay have rules against that, and yet he's still doing it for now. He admitted, we don't know how long this is going to last. But people getting pretty creative in terms of making passive income. And I think this is something that you may want to think about when you're talking about getting a lot of people are freelancing. They're doing, you know, just odd jobs, or they are doing professional work, but not at a traditional job. They're hiring themselves out as freelancers. But this is an interesting piece. And I know this was not from the Wall Street Journal. I'm not sure where this came from. Actually, I forgot to note the source here as I was making my notes, but it is a study of more than 11 million freelance job exchanges that were posted on the online freelance platform Fiverr over the course of 2 years. And they found that replying to an inquiry just 5 to 10 minutes slower can reduce the odds that you get hired for the job. And if you wait more than a day to respond, that drops your chances of getting hired by 90%. Doesn't matter the quality of your work or your experience or how highly you're rated. Researchers tracked these exchanges over the course of 2 years, and they found that people see a quick response as a sign that you will be attentive to their needs. Rightly or wrongly, they view someone who is slow to reply and someone who is as someone who is not likely to complete the job in a timely manner or be responsive to the client's needs. Researchers estimate even 1 hour of a delay in a response to an inquiry can cost freelancers roughly $195 million annually. Not each, obviously, but so if you are among those people who are making income on the side in one way, shape, or form, and maybe you're freelancing when somebody reaches out to you, got to get back to them right away because otherwise you could lose the job. Kind of interesting. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Thursday morning started here. New research finds that there is a 1 in 5 chance that you are being judged by others based solely on your first name. Even before any interaction occurs. Gen Z and millennials are the most judgmental. And when asked what name carries the most negative connotations, would you be surprised to learn if I said it was Karen? Because of, you know, reputation. Don't be a Karen. So if you are a Karen, that is the clear front runner as the most judgmental name, the most judged name, if you are a Karen. Chad ranked second, which is quickly becoming the male version of Karen. So I understand that. And then the rest of the top five are all men's names, Donald, John, and Damien. I wonder if Damien, that goes back to, what is that? Not The Shining. This is not the Amityville Horror. What is that? You know, the movie that I'm talking about. Maybe if you're of a certain age. I can't think of the name of it now. My mind's drawn a blank. Anyway, 2 out of 5 Americans say they do not feel that they embody their own first name. And 1 in 5 say they wish they could change it entirely. What would we change it to? For women, Jessica was the top replacement choice, followed by Amira, Caroline, Lisa, and Natalie. Those are the names that we would pick. I guess we are women, which is odd because the Karen is number one on the list of most judged names and the rest are guys. But the ones that we would change them to are all girls' names. So a lot of Karens, I guess, wish that they could change their name. And I can understand that. I certainly can understand that. And a couple of other items here among the first things that you need to know. This could be this day's news of most lasting significance. A medical breakthrough is offering blind people the fresh hope of seeing again. Restoring sight to the blind. Biomedical engineers at Duke University have developed a hormone serum, if you will, that turns stem cells into retinal cells. And when injected into the eyes, and they've done this with animals. I don't think they've even tried it on humans yet. But in animal experience, when they've injected this into the eyes, these specialized cells repair damaged blood vessels and restore retinal function. This is a major development because vascular eye disease, things like diabetic retinopathy, this affects millions of Americans and is the number one cause of blindness in the U.S. So the potential that we could reverse that and restore sight, that is huge. So clearly, this day's news of most lasting significance. When this becomes a thing, just remember, you heard it here first. And lastly, here among the first things that you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. With Independence Day coming up on Saturday in Washington, they are going for the record books this year. Did you hear about this? Freedom 250, which is the Trump-aligned group that is overseeing the nation's 250th birthday programming, they are organizing from what we understand, a 40-minute fireworks display on the National Mall. That is about double the usual length of the fireworks. Organizers plan to launch over 850,000 fireworks from 10 different sites. And just to be, you know, for comparison, they usually shoot off, what, about 20,000 shells, 20, 30,000 shells, something like that, maybe at the most. And they're going for 850,000. They are targeting a Guinness World Record. The president called it the largest fireworks show in history, in all caps, on social media. And you know how he loves going big. Go big or go home with President Trump. It is expected, the president is expected to speak around 9, and then the show won't begin until after 10:30. So this is the thing. It's going to last 40 minutes. It's not going to start until 10:30, and it's going to be extremely hot in Washington, D.C. on the 4th. And attendees will have to arrive early because of all the security involved in the president speaking. So added security, and because of the security, there will be a ban on coolers, chairs, and bags. So you're going to have to be out there in the 100-degree heat with no coolers, no chairs. I mean, I get, you know, the 250th birthday, you want to do bigger than ever before. It's going to be huge, but it is not going to be fun to actually be there. Just sit home and watch it on TV. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Thursday morning started. This
is ONN. I'm Kate Burdett on the Ohio News Network. Two major supermarkets in Ohio are coming together in a mega merger. ONN's Jay Fox has the story.
The Cincinnati Inquirer reports that Kroger is buying Giant Eagle for $1.65 billion, acquiring its 197 supermarkets and standalone pharmacies across northern Ohio, western Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Maryland, and Indiana. This comes after a proposed merger with Albertsons failed.
Akron transit workers voted overwhelmingly in favor of striking last night. Danita Harris of ONN affiliate WKYC-TV in Cleveland reports with Wayne Cole, president of the local transit workers union.
This comes after the union previously rejected a new contract. Akron Metro workers have been working without a contract since 2024 and say last month's proposal had higher health care costs and did not include retroactive raises for 2024 and 2025.
Our people are so angry. They're so angry. Feel so disrespected. We haven't had a raise in 3 years. It was a total insult.
Under state law, the union would have to give 10 days notice before any walkout.
And at Dayton's Miami Valley Hospital, there are 17 nurses in the labor and delivery unit who are pregnant at the same time. This breaks the hospital's prior record set in 2019 of 11 simultaneous pregnancies. I'm Kate Burdett on the Ohio News Network.
The ONN Daily Podcast. Get a recap of all the day's news from across the state.
ONN affiliate WBNS-TV in Columbus has more.
Haley Kirby reporting in downtown Toledo.
From the State House, Kevin Landers.
ONN Canton.
ONN affiliate WKYC-TV in Cleveland explains.
In Marietta, Brett Wharf, ONN News.
Emma Henderson in Genoa.
The ONN Daily Podcast. Listen at onnradio.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts from the Ohio News Network.
So on Saturday, we celebrate the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence and the founding of what I think most of us would consider to be the greatest country on earth. But long before July 4th, 1776, Benjamin Franklin was organizing colonists to prepare for what he knew would be coming. In fact, our next guest says that Franklin's greatest contribution to America was not a scientific invention or a diplomatic achievement or even his role in securing independence, although all of those things are true. It was a civic philosophy of prevention that helped make self-government possible in the first place. Dr. Barry Davis is author of the new book, The Prevention Years: Diseases, Disasters, and the Discoveries That Changed Our World. And basically, if I can paraphrase here, Dr. Davis, the point that you're making is that America's founding story is not just about the battles and the revolution. It is about citizens, ordinary citizens, learning how to govern themselves, not through a central government in large measure, but through local institutions and voluntary associations, that kind of thing.
Yes, that's correct, Chris. Prevention was not necessarily the top of what Franklin did, but it was right up there with all the other things you mentioned. He had a long history with fire, and he has this phrase, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Most people know that that's due to Franklin, but most people don't know that Franklin was talking about fire prevention. And he learned a lot when he lived in London about what they had done in relation to a great fire there in 1666. Mm-hmm. So he wrote a piece in his newspaper, the Pennsylvania Gazette, which told people how they could prevent fire and also how they could fight fire. And he organized the Union Fire Company, one of the first fire companies in America, and he himself became a firefighter.
And the point that you make in sharing that story is that there is a broader context of kind of the philosophy behind the American experiment, that the challenge in facing this fledgling democracy was convincing citizens and the leaders of the new nation to invest in preventing problems before they became visible crises.
Exactly. Self-government didn't appear out of nowhere. Franklin and others had already been practicing this sort of civic life through associations, libraries, hospitals, fire companies, and local improvements. Americans had to learn how to organize, share costs, accept obligations, and trust. So this was the beginning of what was going to be the American experiment or independence.
This was not about earning political points or political rewards, and that is always true. You know, prevention, even today, is not really the politically expedient way of earning power or flexing that muscle. This is something that has always been true.
That's exactly right. Prevention is can be a very hard sell because it's easy to react to something. If there's a disaster or people get sick, you can have dramatic rescues, you can have dramatic changes.
Yeah.
But the forethought of trying to prevent something, that takes a lot of courage and it takes a lot of action. It takes money, too.
Well, that's what I was going to say. There's often a cost behind that. And again, when there's no immediate need or obvious immediate concern, that becomes an even hard sell. Maybe today, again, I'm sure it was the same in the founding era, in the colonial era, but certainly it is the case that we see today. And there are any number of examples.
Oh, yes. I mean, my book goes through lots of examples, starting with Benjamin Franklin and going through things like auto safety, where a number of doctors tried to sell that we could prevent the bad effects of a car crash if you would just redesign the cars, through things like smoking. You know, if you prevent people from smoking, you can prevent the ravages of smoking later on in their lives. All these people met resistance in trying to make their case for prevention, but most of them actually saw the light. They saw when things were successful for them that things happened.
That the proponents were actually vindicated. And you actually take this one step further. I thought this was really interesting in the sense that the Constitution itself, you know, our governing document, really can be interpreted itself as maybe the greatest preventative framework because it is designed to address all of these things that the founding fathers thought could happen before they happened and threatened this newfound liberty.
Oh, yes. I mean, and obviously Franklin was part of the Declaration and part of the Constitution. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the Constitution itself has lots of stuff built into it. Separation of powers, checks and balances, federal versus states, elections, limits on some arbitrary authority. These were safeguards that were built into the system because all the people that wrote the Constitution knew about what had happened in England and before that.
Yeah. And I've often said, and I'm not the only one who said this, I've heard others say this as well, you have to wonder whether the individuals that are running the government today would have been able to start this country from scratch the way our forefathers did. And I'm wondering if that mindset of prevention, preventing these things that could happen before they did, is the maybe the one element that's missing.
Right. I mean, you could go back and look and see that our forefathers were subject to the rule of England.
Yeah.
And they saw what was happening. Now, we have lived in a free society all these years. And as I said over and over in the book about the effects of prevention are invisible.
Yeah.
You know, nothing happens. So if nothing has happened, people sort of forget.
We get complacent.
Exactly.
So on that note, and again, with the semi-quincentennial coming up on Saturday, kind of put this into the into context of America 250. I mean, why do you feel that this legacy is as relevant now as ever, the lesson that we still need to learn? And you know, what should it teach us about the responsibilities that are required to sustain self-government and make sure that 250 years from now, the generations that will come after us will be celebrating the 500th anniversary?
A couple of things. One is that patriotism, you know, love of country, should also think about prevention. I mean, it's patriotic to honor the Declaration, but I think it's also patriotic to keep everybody safe and well, whether you keep protect bridges from falling down or protect children from disease or prepare for epidemics or maintain institutions that make daily life safer. You can't be free if you're not there to see it. So, and at the end, you know, Franklin had said to somebody that asked him what would happen, and he says, it's the Republic if you can keep it. Well, a Republic's not self-sustaining. It requires attention, trust, and discipline, and the willingness to do something. So I think that, you know, we need to honor 1776, by celebrating the courage of our forefathers, but we also need to remember about civic discipline that made self-government possible.
Again, Dr. Barry Davis is author of the new book, The Prevention Years, Diseases, Disasters, and the Discoveries That Changed Our World. Do you have a website where folks can learn more about the book?
Sure. It's barryrdavismd.com.
Dr. Barry Davis, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it. Happy 4th.
Happy 4th to you. Thank you very much, Chris.
The heat continues. It could be a record-setting day today, and not the kind of record you want to set. That extreme heat warning has been extended to at least 8 p.m. on Friday now. And it's not like all of a sudden after 8 o'clock, 8.01 p.m. on Friday, that Mother Nature is going to switch off the heat either. It's going to be very toasty over the entire 4th of July weekend, along with possibility of some storms and all of that. In these kind of extreme conditions, we not only have to be cognizant of the impact of the heat on ourselves, but on our pets as well. Make sure that they are staying safe in these conditions. And as we come up on the 4th of July, with respect to our pets, it's not just the heat either. I mean, for most of us, the summer season, the upcoming 4th of July holiday specifically, is a time for food, friends, fireworks, and lots of fun. But for our pets, it can be extremely scary and overwhelming. Not long ago, we spoke with animal wellness and pet expert Amy Galbraith of PetSmart Charities about how we can protect our anxious pets during the upcoming festivities. Amy, talk a little bit about the importance of taking this seriously, because I think so often we think, oh, the dog will be fine. You know, we don't give it a second that, oh, don't worry about the dog, he'll be fine. But this is very serious stuff.
Well, it's really important to protect your pets around the 4th of July, because unfortunately that is the busiest time of year at animal shelters.
Yeah.
So many animals panic from those fireworks and flee. And if that happens to your dog or cat, you want to make sure they get home safely. So there's a couple of things you can do. Firstly, please be sure your pet always has a collar on with ID tags with your contact information. And secondly, please have them microchipped for permanent identification. It's a tiny little device about the size of a grain of rice. The thing is that the microchip only works if you register it with your up-to-date contact information. And if you're like a lot of pet owners, you may know that your pet is microchipped, but you may not be certain that your registration is up-to-date. You just need the microchip number and a few minutes, and when your chip is registered, your dog is 2.5 times more likely and your cat is a whopping 21 times more likely to come home from the shelter. So it's definitely worth the time.
Yeah, a lot of people may not even realize that the microchip is the your information is not embedded in the microchip. It's just the serial number, which is then matched up on a database.
Exactly. You can think of it like a social security number for your pet, but it is a passive RFID chip. It doesn't have a battery or anything. So there's a limited amount that it can do on its own. You really need to match it up with your contact information in a database.
Yeah. As a sidebar on this, even if your pets have not necessarily had an anxiety reaction to fireworks in the past, it's not to say that it won't happen in the future. We had that happen with our dog a few years ago. He had been fine in the past, and 1 year, suddenly, it really seemed to bother him all of a sudden. So don't think that just because they've been okay with it in the past that that will be the case this year. Are there any other things, products, that kind of thing that we can look to help calm our pets down?
There are. You've probably heard a lot of the buzz lately about CBD hemp oil products for people.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out they actually are very calming and relaxing, and they're great for anxiety in pets as well. Hemp is legal in all 50 states, and my favorite brand is from a company called Pet Relief. There have been no known overdoses with these products, so you can administer them without fear. Pet Relief is a really great brand because they've developed a proprietary strain of the hemp plant that is just for dogs and cats, and they have a full line of USDA-certified organic products. That's everything from oils and capsules to even a topical cream. My personal favorite is their veterinarian-developed liposomal oil. It comes in a wild Alaskan salmon oil base, so you can put it directly on your pet's food. And that has two advantages. Firstly, it means that it gets into their system faster for quicker relief. But secondly, they really like the way it tastes, so you're not fighting with them to get a pill down.
There you go. You know, this also doesn't just apply for fireworks. So we frame this in the context of 4th of July coming up, but this is also summer storm season. We've certainly had our fair share of those, and that can certainly trigger anxiety in pets as well. Those loud noises for a similar reason. What else can we do inside our homes, whether we're home or not, to help keep our pets comfortable? So again, to minimize that anxiety.
A little advanced preparation goes a long way. So the day of, if you've got a dog, please take them out early in the day, well before the fireworks, get them some exercise and burn off some energy so they're ready for a quiet night at home. And then bring them inside well before those fireworks start. You want to close the windows, draw the blinds, set up an area for them that's comfy, cozy, their favorite bed, a fluffy blanket in their crate. Maybe bring out a special treat, like a chew toy that they don't often get, so that they have something to keep them busy. And then think about turning on the TV or the radio, because that noise can provide a distraction from all of those loud booms outside. And then for some pets, really that sensation of a hug is very calming. So you can also look into those anti-anxiety wraps and coats.
And those really do work.
They do.
So again, with all of those extra stimulus, whether we're talking about the fireworks, summer storms, whatever it might happen to be, it can all be very panic-inducing to pets, or at least certainly can raise their anxiety level. It only makes sense. They're much more sensitive to those noises than what human hearing is.
Very true. They have all of their senses heightened, and so they react much more strongly to all of those things than we do.
Our conversation with Amy Gelbreth of PetSmart Charities about how we can protect our anxious pets for the 4th of July. We get summer storms. We may get both over the weekend at some point. And it's so important, as she was mentioning, to make sure that our pets are comfortable. Because how many times do we say, if you're going out to watch the fireworks, either at the Hancock County Fairgrounds campgrounds or wherever it is that you're going to take in the fireworks, leave your pets at home. But that means they're going to be at home while probably people in your neighborhood are setting off fireworks, and they're going to be hearing those even from inside, and they can get very anxious and you're not around. And so you want to do everything you can to make sure that they are comfortable when they are on their own and those things are going on around them. So very, very important all the way around to make sure that we prepare for this and keep our pets as comfortable and as safe as possible. You can learn more at our webpage. Go to goodmornings.net. It is the party we have been waiting 250 years for, and it is finally here. And if there is one thing that Americans love to do, it is to celebrate with food. Most of which is probably not all that good for us, but do we care? No. What we do care about is the way it can leave us feeling the next day. Nutritional educator Dr. Julie Gatze is one of the nation's top digestive health experts, and she is here this morning with some simple ways to enjoy the holiday spread without suffering through a post-barbecue food hangover. And Dr. Julie, is it generally the type of food or the amount of food that is the problem, or is it a little bit of both? I mean, what causes that bloated and that sluggish feeling that we get the next day?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. And what I've come to realize is you do have to have a little bit of a strategic plan if you're going to go onto a barbecue, some big event. And so I have a couple of tips for that, because there's no fun going eating and then you feel lousy and, you know, 2 hours after arriving.
Yeah. So the first tip is not to pile everything on your plate at once. Is that like the biggest mistake that people do when they load up their plate? And again, we've all done it.
Yes. And the reason being is we're supposed to be making digestive enzymes. Because our food has changed and things have changed, we are not making the adequate amount to break down a normal meal, even from a quote unquote healthy person. So many of us are suffering with gas, bloating, indigestion, heartburn, constipation, diarrhea, acid reflux. Those are all very common, but they're not normal. So when you have those symptoms, this is just the warning of this is what you want to try to avoid so that you can measure your gut health. So instead of piling your plate, head towards the barbecue and go have the protein first, whether that be the salmon, the meat, the chicken, the fish, whatever it may be, go eat that first and eat an adequate size portion, because protein is the hardest to break down.
Okay.
And the one thing the body needs the most.
And then you say, once you start with the protein, then give yourself a little bit of a minute to recover, you know, give your stomach a minute.
That's right. And so then you can head towards maybe a salad, something a little bit on the vegetable side, just because it's the second most important thing that you should be putting into the body. By that time, you've slowed it down. You aren't just, you know, eating your plate like a clock. And then you can have some macaroni and cheese, potato salad, bread items, but put those third because of the fact that the first two are so important, and give them an adequate amount to digest. Don't try to make it compete with the bread and the macaroni cheese and the potato salad, and your whole system is going, wait, what?
Yeah. So in other words, it's not just what we eat, it's what order we eat things in that is important. And then this is kind of interesting. It says here, cool down before you chow down. What does that mean?
Well, if you are under stress, the body, whether it's thermal stress or mental stress, physical stress, your digestion is not the thing that says, dun da da, I'm here to save the day. You have a priority system, and digestion is last on that during stress. So you do want to chill the body out, basically say, hey, we're ready to be able to digest food, because a lot of people don't, and then they wonder why they feel sick to their stomach and stomach aches, and it's because they just didn't have the ability to actually digest that food. So it sits there, it ferments, it is toxic to the system because it's not getting broken down, and then you have symptoms that will ensue.
And you also talk about to be careful with heavy food combinations. Again, kind of reiterates some of what you were talking about before. But again, beware of the combinations.
That's right, because it's a lot of different things going in at the same time. Now, you can't always avoid that. Pizza is a great example. It has everything in it.
Yeah.
So, great, enjoy your pizza. However, if you're, you know, have the choice to separate and make choices on what it is that you're going to put onto your plate, then, you know, do the protein, do the vegetables, then do the bread items if you do them at all. And then desserts. But, you know, there's always plenty of food at a barbecue. I'm rarely seen a hostess that ran short on something. So you don't have to run through and try to consume it all before everyone else. And if you do want a dessert, throw a napkin over it. Go put it in the fridge. Put it in a to-go. You don't have to eat it immediately. Just give your body a chance to break it down. Break down the normal food, and then you can throw in the sugars.
The next tip that you have here, it says use digestion-friendly add-ons. Are there add-ons that can actually support better digestion at your cookout? What would those be?
Yeah, so with all the different ethnicities in this country also came with their ways to break down food just inherently. You've got sauerkraut with the Germans, kimchi with the Koreans. You've got ginger and turmeric and peppermint and coleslaw here in America, pickles, pickle juice. All those things are fermented food and aid in digestion. Hmm. So you can always, don't ignore that parsley on the side of the plate. It helps. That piece of mint in the drink, eat it. And these are all things that just naturally help out with digestion. For I've been giving high quality digestive enzymes to my patients for years. And the reason being is I think it's more important to take an enzyme than it is to take a multivitamin.
I thought it was interesting, final tip that you have here, the point that you make to know when your body may need digestive support. Are there warning signs? I mean, obviously the next day we wake up and we know immediately, ooh, I overdid it yesterday. Again, we've all been there. But in the moment, are there warning signs that, you know, your body may be telling you, hey, maybe time to sort of back off a little bit?
Yes. And, you know, keep in mind, those are the warning signs that are already happened. So then, you know, great, throw in digestive enzymes. The company that I use is called Absorbate. It's a vegan formula. It has everything in it to break down proteins, carbohydrates, fats, dairy products. But when you have those symptoms happening, great, take the enzymes. But as a normal process, you should be taking them every time you eat. We don't have the food source that we used to have when we grew up and our grandparents had. Things are altered. Broccoli is not as healthy as broccoli used to be. So here we are with the same type of bodies with just less nutritious food. So if you can wring more nutrition out of that food, the Absorbate actually increases your absorption by 71%. That is significant improvement on nutrients for food, because we aren't just eating for taste. You might think so and forget about that. Mm-hmm. However, you know, eat a Big Mac every day for a month and see how you actually look and feel. So we're eating for nutrition ultimately.
Yeah. And then real quickly, I have to ask you about this because it has been hot all week. As we know, it's going to be a scorcher of a 4th of July weekend. How does the heat, obviously, you know, we get into the, you know, backyard barbecues, we're going to be having a couple of beers, you've got the food, you've got the alcohol, you've got the heat mixed in. How does that all impact that? I'm sure that makes things even worse, right?
It does. It's just one more stressor. So, you know, maybe you want to go a bit fed so that you don't go, you know, wanting to consume everything in sight. So make sure to have a breakfast. Don't just go on an empty stomach. If you are going to have some alcohol, have a alcohol and a glass of water, then another alcohol and a glass of water. It slows the roll. It hydrates you in between. And, you know, if you have a choice to eat lighter foods, this is what summer food is about. The watermelon, the salads, the coleslaw, you know, the fish, the chicken, maybe not slather on all the heavy items and then, you know, expect to feel good.
All right. Nutritional educator Dr. Julie Gatzo with us this morning, kind of helping us survive the all of the digestive discomfort that comes with the holiday celebrations that are coming up this weekend, because it's a big one. Where do we get more information, Dr. Julie?
They can go to a website and actually get some free samples. And that website is naturessources.com. The other thing they can do is they can go to a 1-800 number and use the code radio. Same thing, free samples or 20% off their first order. And that is 1-800-827-7656.
There we go. Dr. Julie, thanks very much for taking the time. Happy 4th.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you. You too.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
In the news business, there are two separate and distinct groups: breaking news and the news that is already broken. These are their stories.
We begin in the international file of the broken news. A masked vigilante dubbed the Batman of Mexico is being sought by police after allegedly capturing some suspected bicycle thieves and taping them to lampposts. Now that's street justice right there. At least five men were found bound with silver duct tape across the Jalisco region since mid-June. Many had the word retero, Spanish for thief, written across their forehead, along with drawn-on mustaches and cat whiskers. And some showed signs that they had been beaten. The stolen bikes were left nearby. Five such incidents have been confirmed. Investigators are examining the cases, noting that the men that were bound with the duct tape are actually considered the victims of an unlawful assault. No arrests have yet been made. Duct tape to lampposts. I never thought I would say this, but I think we could take a lesson from the folks in Mexico. The Batman of Mexico. Meanwhile, in Florida, you talk about unusual thefts. We've had a lot of unusual thefts in the broken news. But a man in Florida is accused of stealing Smokey Bear signs from state parks and selling them on Facebook Marketplace. 30-year-old Hunter Lovett is scheduled for a jury trial starting later this month. He faces up to 10 years in prison for stealing the Smokey Bear signs. The case was investigated by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife and U.S. Forest Services. So it's like a federal crime. Who knew? The Smokey Bear signs. Hands off. Next time you're in a national park. A church in Lexington, Kentucky is facing criticism after a video filmed inside the church is going viral on social media. The video, which was filmed during the Vacation Bible School program at the Mount Olivet Baptist Church, shows people dressed as soldiers armed with airsoft guns entering the church, shooting a person depicted as the devil, and then dragging the devil out of the church. What in the world? This was all done in the presence of children. It's Vacation Bible School week. Pastor Dwayne Walker has since posted a video on Facebook stating that the skit was not meant to condone violence. You've got people wielding guns coming into the church and shooting the devil, dragging his lifeless body off. Maybe chalk that up to the idea of seemed like a good idea at the time, although I can't believe who that seemed like a good idea to. And finally, the broken news this morning. Connecticut State Police report in a Facebook post that a semi-truck overturned on a highway in Salisbury recently, causing a cargo spill. While the official report does not mention this, but the accompanying photos clearly show hundreds of cans of Michelob Ultra beer strewn across the road. What a tragedy coming up on the 4th of July. Police say, quote, the road was closed for several hours to facilitate an extensive cleanup effort. Yeah, I'll bet. Oh, yeah, we had to clean it up. The extended closure, the cops say, was necessary to clear the large volume of debris and to safely remove the severely damaged truck and trailer. Yeah, I'm sure that's what it was. It had to be closed for several hours. They had to clean it all up. What a great time to be a Connecticut state police officer, I'm thinking. There you go. That is today's broken news report. An update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Finley, get ready to rock for a cause. Join Flag City Honor Flight on Saturday, July 11th from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Finley Elks Lodge 75 for the Reunion Band Concert and Dance. Enjoy a fantastic evening of live music and dancing, all while supporting Flag City Honor Flight, a local organization helping veterans visit the memorials in Washington, D.C. that honor their service and sacrifice. Come out to 900 West Melrose Avenue. Let's show our veterans how much we appreciate them. This message provided by WFIN.
Time now for your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. What is more American than enjoying a cold one after a long day or tipping a few back on the weekend, especially a holiday weekend like the one we have coming up? Well, new YouGov data reveals that 36% of Americans of legal drinking age are consuming less alcohol than they were a year ago. Only 5% report drinking more. An additional 2% say they have stopped drinking entirely. Now, as to why, half say the reason is simply a reduced desire to drink. 35% cite health concerns, and 20% say that they no longer can afford to drink as much as they previously did. And certainly relate to that. In a separate study of American men, Gen Z males age 18 to 29 are the healthiest generation overall. They drink less alcohol, they exercise more, they eat more home-cooked meals, and they get the most sleep. Millennials ranked second, followed by Gen X, and boomers, baby boomers, actually finishing last in terms of healthy lifestyles. But that being said, while older men exercise the least and drink the most, they also eat the most fruits and vegetables, order less takeout, and report the lowest stress levels. So there is that. And I guess when you're doing all of those other things right, you can have a few, not feel guilty about it. Overall, 65% of men in this survey say they are taking charge of their health now more than ever. With summer underway, wedding season, of course, is here too, so there is that. And, of course, America's 250th birthday celebration this weekend. There is no better time to raise a glass and celebrate. And after all, what would a celebration be without a cocktail? And joining us this morning to talk about the signature cocktail of the summer and tell us how to make it is Bombay Sapphire gin mixologist Eddie Johnson. Now, first of all, before we get into this, I have to say that I do take exception to the name of this. It's you call it the French Blonde, and I'm thinking of all of the years, and it's America 250. It's America 250. We're celebrating a very important 4th of July, a very important anniversary. I don't know why we're calling it the French Blonde. Now, I suppose you could say that France was the first country to recognize American independence internationally, and they did help us in the American Revolution, in the Revolutionary War. They did send aid. So I guess historically, there is some accuracy to that. So I don't know, maybe that's the thing. But anyway, Eddie, what exactly is the French Blonde, and why is it the cocktail that everyone is talking about this summer?
So, great question. The French Blonde is just absolutely delicious. It's kind of a mashup of a few different classic cocktails, so it's got some familiar flavors that we all know and love, right? You're going to get bright citrus from the grapefruit juice and the Bianco vermouth. you're going to get some florality and some fruit from the Saint-Germain elderflower liqueur. And it's all tied together perfectly by the bright, beautiful botanicals of Bombay Sapphire. Mm. So really, this cocktail works for so many different occasions, whether it's more dressed up black tie or whether it's, you know, backyard barbecue, and especially wedding season, right?
Yeah.
One of my favorite times of year. I love being amongst family and friends and usually somewhere beautiful, you know. And you know the phrase, right? Something old, something new, something borrowed, something blue.
There you go.
Usually, you know, earring. Exactly, right? Like, you know, typically it's something cheeky like a ribbon or something like that. With Bombay Sapphire, your something blue gets to be something everyone can enjoy all together. And the French Blonde is just the best way to do it.
Okay, so to hear you describe it, it sounds just absolutely fantastic, but it also sounds a little complicated. So walk us through how to make this. What do we need?
Absolutely. I know, look, you know, I've entertained a lot of people at home, and I've been a bartender for years, but, you know, when you're bartending at home, it can sometimes feel a little complicated, but the beauty of this drink is it's so simple to make, and you can get everything you need to make it from your favorite grocery store or your favorite bottle shop. So you start, typically I start, of course, with the star of the show, the jewel of gin, Bombay Sapphire. So I give it 1 ounce, and I use a jigger, or you could use a measuring glass, whatever you have at home. Mm-hmm. And I just go straight into the tin. So 1 ounce of Bombay Sapphire, 3/4 of an ounce of Saint-Germain elderflower liqueur.
All right.
And then I go to my Bianco vermouth. So I give that just 1/2 ounce right into the tin there. And then 1.5 ounces of fresh grapefruit juice. Of course, fresh is always best. But in the case of grapefruit juice, store-bought is usually just as good.
Okay.
But if you can juice fresh, of course, it's always good. Then I give it just a dash of lemon bitters. And so that brightens up the whole cocktail and really ties all those flavors together. So once you've got it built in your tin, you just ice the tin down. I usually fill my tin about halfway full or either 3/4 full, because you want your cocktail to be ice cold, but you don't want it too watery, right?
Okay.
So once you've got your ice in the tin, I just top up the tin there. I give it a nice hard shake, and you really got to shake it like you mean it. You know, I see too many just soft shakes out there. You got to give it a nice hard shake. And I usually shake for about 10 to 15 seconds is a nice rule of thumb, but really you can feel the frost start to form on the outside of the tin.
Okay.
And that's when you know you're done, right?
Okay.
The cocktail's ice cold, but not too watery. I just run it through a tea strainer or like a fine strainer just to keep the ice chips out of it. Because again, if you put the ice chips in, you're going to get it a little too watery.
All right.
Once you've got it in your beautiful coupe glass, you just give it a nice expression of grapefruit zest right over the top. And that oil is going to be the lead aromatic. When you take your first sip, you're going to get a big bouquet of citrus oil and florality. And That's the French Blonde.
Man, that does sound great. Again, like you said, the Bombay Sapphire specifically is the right gin for this.
Absolutely. Look, Bombay Sapphire is classic for a reason, you know. If you look across the gin category, most gin is made through a process called steep and boil. And I know that sounds a little nerdy, so let's make it just plain and simple. With steep and boil gins, you're usually using direct heat to get the most kind of like cooked and caramelized expression out of those botanicals.
Mm-hmm.
That's how most gin is made. With Bombay Sapphire, we put it through a process called vapor infusion, right? And what that does is expresses those botanicals how they actually taste in nature, right? So rather than that cooked expression, we get bright, fresh, kind of uplifting notes. So really, we'd like to say that Bombay Sapphire makes cocktails brighter, just across the board. And that's why it's been so successful for so long and really one of the most versatile gins out there. You can use it in any gin cocktail, but especially the French Blonde. It just absolutely sings in it.
We're making folks master mixologists here this morning. Bombay Sapphire gin mixologist Eddie Johnson with us this morning. Where can folks go for that recipe and for more information, Eddie?
Absolutely. So if you want the French Blonde recipe or any other recipe with Bombay Sapphire, Or you're just looking for where you can find a bottle near you. The best place to go is BombaySapphire.com, and that'll sort you all out.
Eddie Johnson, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. Visit us online at goodmornings.net. And if you're a regular listener to the podcast, we would appreciate it if you would take a moment to leave us a rating or review on your favorite podcasting platform to help others discover the show as well. And we thank you very much for that. Again, a quick reminder, no podcast tomorrow as we celebrate America's semi-quincentennial. Back on Monday with details on a ride to remember to benefit the annual Wreaths Across America program. So until Monday morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day, a great weekend. Have a happy and safe 4th of July. We'll catch you back here next week.